tonight's show is as full of evil as the Black Pit. I just thought that I would warn you before we began tonight's show that if you are one of the sensitive ones, one of the queasy ones, I would like to respectfully suggest that you get the hell out of here. You have no business here. You know what I said? I am serious about it. I got some real bad stuff for you tonight. I mean bad stuff, if you will, please. No. Echo, please. Just wanna clear the clinkers out here and get ready. I mean, if you're a banshee, by God, you've got to know how to be one. Just sitting here, see, contemplating the infinite. Contemplating the evil that lurks in the hearts of men. Everywhere. Every place you look. And you can find it in the most inconsequential, the most innocent-looking packages. For example, I'm sitting there reading one of my favorite journals, the London Observer, which I always read, of course. Under the financial section, for example, it says, there is not free trade yet in the six countries of the European Common Market. You know, the European Common Market, you know about this thing. If you die in Luxembourg and want to be cremated, the nearest crematoria are in Strasbourg or Metz, which are both in France. Well, bodies are then sent to France, and they're neatly cooked, and then the ashes are returned to Luxembourg with a 10% value-added tax, because the value has been increased. When it returns, and they're ashes, they put them in a little pot. That's the kind of evil that is lurking in our world today. I mean, you're worth more when they reduce you to ashes than when you're laying there full-blown, you know, your tongue hanging out and your eyeballs popping out. Oh, that's evil, friends. May I please try another little evil? Yes. Well, listen, that ain't... Right. Hold on. I said stop it. I don't like to mess around. You notice how tough I am tonight? And I get carried away at times. I just thought I'd warn you that you better stand back from the radio unless you want to get tainted by the passion virus. I'm going to reach out and grab you. Oh, yes. You think that that's an evil? But listen to this one. There's a little picture here. You see this guy standing there dressed as a Napoleonic soldier? This is in the papers. The kind of stuff that's going on. Listen to this. It says, again, in the Observer, it says, we drove out to Waterloo for old time's sake and ran into Norbert Dracine, 65, a one-time mechanic, now a full-time collector of Napoleonica. He has thousands of volumes on the Emperor. His family owns a restaurant allegedly built from the relics of the battlefield. Dracine produced a cardboard box full of malodorous bones, which he claims his ancestors collected after the battle. He takes out his box of bones once in a while and sits there and enjoys them like any other relic. Malodorous. He says the British government has offered to buy his collection for the nation. He likes to dress up like the old guard for what Napoleon's warriors called la croix et la prune. Otherwise, the Belgians don't go in much for eccentricity. However, old Norbert has his box of bones. Now, wait a minute. Don't laugh. Oh, no. Think of this for a moment. Think about it for a moment. He has collected the bones of the soldiers that were collected on the battlefield at Waterloo. Bones. Bones. Have you ever run into anything like that? Have you ever personally ever run into a collector of, well, let's say, gruesome mania? You have it. I have. My God, what I have seen. What I have seen, I shouldn't even tell you. In fact, you know, this doesn't really surprise me at all, because I one time had an... well, the first time I actually ran into a thing like this, I was about, I guess, 9. It's a sickening story, and I'm going to warn you, before we go into the story, I'm going to warn you, it is a story that is liable to cause you to get up and jump up and run out into the John to retch for about a half an hour. I'm just warning you. I don't want you to write back to
there, Mr. Shepherd. That story was in bad taste. My cat was sick for a week or three.
Sorry, madam. I'm warning you. You must have fiber of steel to listen to this story. It's a sickening story. Oh, no, I shouldn't. Yes, you want to hear it? All right. Before I tell you this story, you know, we've got a couple of commercials here. I'm thinking about telling you this story. Now, I want you to remember Norbert. Remember Norbert? The guy that collected the bones of the battlefield at Waterloo? Probably right this minute. You know, there's a big time difference between here and Belgium. Right this minute, Norbert is probably sleeping the sleep of the just. He's just about to get up in the morning, to, you know, have a little coffee, maybe a little croissant like they have in Belgium, and then to sit cackling over his box of bones. After all, he's retired. What else does he have to do? He takes the bones out and he throws them up in the air, and, you know, like, well, you've seen how Silas Marner dribbles the money over his head and runs around, you know. I can see old Norbert there with them bones, just, you know, running his hands from throwing them up in the air and inviting his friends in to see him. Speaking of old bones, this is WOR. I'm going to do it now. This is you. You'll just have to accept it, friend. This is WOR New York. This is a very difficult spot to do in a lot of ways. And it's one of those odd ones. Have you seen all over town little tiny things pasted on telephone poles and stuff that simply just say year one? Well, yeah, you just keep your eye out. Well, I would like to point out to you, and I'm going to read directly from the comment they have on it. I've known these guys for a couple of years. It's a very complex idea. But do you know that in the rock world for years there has been a rumor circulating about a concert, of the ultimate rock concert, really, that would be eventually held in the Grand Canyon? Now, this is a legitimate rumor that's been around. Well, here's an outfit that's going to try to pull it off. And they have a band called the Year One Band, and in fact they have a two-record album called Year One. It's a rock opera that is all connected with the Grand Canyon. According to Kay Daddy, the spokesperson for the Year One Band and co-author of the Year One Rock Opera, along with G.S. Kimple and the Hermit, quote, "There is no greater natural amplifier than that provided by the Earth itself at the Grand Canyon." That's true. I mean, you can't conceive of a bigger hyperbolic function than to bounce music off the walls of the Grand Canyon. In theory, you know, you could gather all of humanity in the canyon with plenty of room to spare. The idea is a concert which involves all of humanity. And they're doing it symbolically. It's a wild scene. So all I've got to suggest, if you're into that kind of metaphysical ideas, you'll find this very interesting. Year One. Incidentally, this album just got a smash review from one of the big rock reviewers in Denver. And it's beginning to spread from the West Coast. And it's called Year One. The album is simply called that year. It's a rock album. It's an album based on a rock opera. Very fascinating. Anyway, it's distributed by Beta Records, B-E-T-A, Beta Records, and you can see it at Corvette, Record House, Sam Goody's. It will soon be all of your neighborhood stores. Ask them about it. Just go and say, how about getting Year One? All right, enough of this stuff here. I'm going to tell you a story, man. I read this, you know. I just picked this up, seeing I could see old Norbert sitting there. And he's, I know exactly how many are left. I can just see him throwing those bones up in the air and dribbling them down over his head, you know. And I thought, you know, I wonder how many people have ever had an experience like that. Well, it can happen to you. I mean, when you least expect it. I'm about 9, see. And, you know, you never know what people's, what are contained in people's lives. And you walk past these guys' houses. And you look, and it looks like a house, and you see a fern in the window, and you see a swing out of the porch, and you figure, you know, it's just a plain ordinary house. These people are just walking around, you know, making sandwiches, eating peanut butter, and watching TV and stuff. Don't you believe it? It is more than meets the eye. Norbert's sitting there dribbling those bones over his head, cackling. That's just scratching the surface. I'm about 9, see? I was about 9, I guess, yeah. And I was going to the Warren G. Harding School. Now, this is a time when you're made out of tinfoil. You know, you can be bent in any direction. Now, had I not seen this, had I not had this experience, I could very easily have been one of those nice, warm, smiley guys like Mike Douglas. Well, who really believes in Phyllis Diller and stuff like that. Really loves it. Oh, yeah. But I was changed forever that afternoon into a totally different guy. I'm about 9, see. And up to this time, the only thing I ever saw, the most exciting thing I ever saw was, like, you know, stuff like chocolate Easter bunnies, you know, kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. Once in a while, you'd see a Raggedy Ann doll. You know, maybe you'd see an Airedale walking down the street, biting somebody. You know, that's about it. That's about the extent of the horror in your life, you know. Well, I'm walking home from school one day, and I am with Schwartz, and I am with Flick, and I am with Bruner. We're walking down the alley, as we often did, kicking a tin can along. We had these, you know, kids invent games, continually inventing different games. They'll play the same game for about 3 days, and then they forget that one. They don't play that anymore, and they invent rules as they go along. And we had a game that involved carnation milk cans. You know, the milk cans? Well, we'd look in the garbage, we'd find a carnation milk can, and instantly we would stomp up and down on it, making it a little ball of tin. You know, just stamp it around, and it becomes like a tin puck, is what it becomes. Real sharp puck. And instantly we divide into teams, me and Schwartz, and then Flick and Bruner be on the other side, and we would kick this can down the alley towards home. It was a running game that had no defined goals. Except, you see, we had various goals and we went. If the guy that would kick it, let's say, into Mrs. Snyder's garbage can, if you could kick it in, that'd be a concrete garbage can with a thing open there. If you kick it in there, that's 2 points. And then there would be a battle for that. Then somebody would fish it out and you'd start kicking it forward again. The first guy, yeah, all little rules. So we're kicking this can down the street there, down the alley. We're kicking away there. And there's this kid with us named Jack Martin. Now, you don't hear me talk much about Martin on the show. Because Martin was a sinister figure, in a way. He was a lone kid. He would sit in the corner, you know, and never say much. And sit around and funny smile. So, Jack Martin, yeah, you know, Jack Martin is trailing along with us as they were kicking a can along there. See, well, we come along past Martin's house. Each kid would, as he would hit his house, he would peel off, and the game would change. You know, we'd get to Schwartz's house first, then Flick's house, then my house. After that would come Broner's house. Each kid, you know, sort of tails off. Well, here's Martin. See, we're going along. Martin's house is first. So we're kicking a can along. He's just with us. See, he's not part of the game. He's just with us. So we're kicking a can. And all of a sudden, Martin, without any cueing, says, "Hey, you guys want to come in? I'll show you something." Yeah, I've never been in Martin's house. There's some kids that just are not part of the crowd. You don't go in his house, right? You just know this kid. That's it. It's the first time he ever says, "Hey, you guys want to come in? I'll show you something." My first impulse was say, kick the kid. Schwartz says, "What?" Martin says, "Well, I'll show you when we get in." Flip says, "What are you going to show us?" Martin says, "Wouldn't you like to know?" That's a typical kid answer, you know. "Wouldn't you like to know?" Flip says, "No, just well, I'll show it to you if you come in." Well, Bruner says, "Let's go." Flip says, "Okay. That's all right." Schwartz said, "Is anybody home?" Martin says, "No, my old man's at work. My mother's ain't home." Okay. So we go drifting through the backyard. First time I've ever been in Martin's backyard. We go drifting through the backyard, up the back steps. And Martin fishes over the top of the door and gets the key down. You know how they hide the key on the top? He opens the door and says, "Come on in, you guys." And he had his house was kind of dark, you know, with the shades pulled down. Some people live with the shades pulled down all the time, you know. Shades pulled down, and you could smell. Every house I've ever been in has a distinctive smell of the family that lives in that house. I'm sorry, it does. And it's never changing. I can still smell what Schwartz's house smells like. The minute I walk in, that's the Schwartz smell. Funny smell, you know, it's the smell of that house. Doppler's house had another smell. Flick's house had a smell of 12,000 dogs. Yeah, everyone named Zero. He had dogs. That's just, every time, you know, I run, go past the place where I smell dogs, it's Flick, you know. Well, here I am in the Martin house. It's a funny smell. And the smell was a little bit like yeast. You know what yeast smells like? Yeast. It's Martin's house. We're in the kitchen now. It's dark. So Martin says, "You guys want anything to eat?" And he opens the refrigerator, a lot of stuff on the refrigerator. Flick says, "Yeah, what do you got?" So he got some Cokes in there. So we're popping a Coke. And we're sitting there making a Coke. And finally Schwartz says, "What are you going to show us?" Martin says, "I don't think I should." I said, "What do you mean you don't think you should? You got us in here because you're going to show us the stuff." "I don't think so." Bruner says, "Oh, come on. Will you? You get us in the house here. What are you trying to do?" Martin says, "Well, I don't think I should. Belongs to my dad." "Oh, that's something else." And Flick says, "Belongs to your dad? What is it?" He says, "I don't know. I don't know that I should show it to you." Flick says, come on, by this time, you know, we're all sitting there. Yeah, what is it, say? He says, "Well, look, you promise you won't tell nobody about this. And I'm going to tell you something, friend. This is the first time I have ever told a story, I will guarantee. In fact, I was not even reminded of any of this stuff. I sort of blocked it out in my head until I ran across this thing with Norbert, with the bones of the Napoleonic soldiers. And malodorous bones at that." Martin says, "It belongs to my dad. I don't think I should show it to you." And Flick says, "You think? What do you mean you don't think you should show it to us? How come you said you were going to show it to us? I'm already half an hour late for going home, you know?" Martin says, "Look, don't tell anybody if I show you this." And George says, "Oh, don't worry. And at that point, all of us, he says, "Come on down in the basement." All of us went down into Martin's basement. Now, his basement was the first one I saw like this. His basement was done up. It was finished. It had a playroom down there and all that stuff, you know. The basement I lived in, where our house was, had a bunch of old Allstate tires piled up to the ceiling, you know. And a lot of old pieces of angle iron and stuff down there, and a lot of wheels and junk. At a washing machine and stuff, but his basement had linoleum on the floor, and it had wood around the walls, and it had a pool table. It's the first time. It was a whole new thing. See, for example, look at a pool table there. with that mind. He says, don't touch him. Our man gets real mad if you play cool on him. He says, because, you know, he really gets mad. Don't mess around with it. He says, I'm going to show you what he's got. And so we go past the pool table. I can still see the scene. I did not have any idea what I was about to see. And Martin says, now, don't tell anybody about this. Don't tell anybody. And he opens this cabinet, which is on the side of the wall. And in the cabinet were these pool cues. These pool cues were sitting next to him. And in the cabinet were some shelves right under the pool cues. We're all standing around looking at these things. And it was a funny smell. Very funny smell. As soon as he opened that cabinet door, he says, now don't tell anybody. And he had a Prince Albert can. One of these pound cans. You know, they're red. Prince Albert. There's a picture of Prince Albert on the side. Have you seen them? The Prince Albert tobacco cans. It was on the shelf. He says, this is my old man's. Man, if he sees me showing you this, he's really going to skin me alive, man. This is... He takes out the Prince Albert can, and he carries it over to the pool table, puts it on the pool table, and says, now look, after I show you this, don't mention it to anybody, and I can only show it to you for a couple of seconds, and we got to get out of here, because if he finds me messing with this, it's all over. So we're all hanging up at the pool table. He says, look, he takes the top off. We all peer in. He's got this yellow light bulb lit over our head. In the can is a wad of cotton. He says, now watch, look at this. He takes the cotton off. And there inside was this little brown thing. Was on another wad of cotton just laying in there. And I looked down in to see what it is. And just then, Schwartz goes, ah!
Ooh, what is it?
It had a fingernail on it. A fingernail on that little brown thing. And then I saw what it was. It was the second joints. The fingernail and the first and second joints. A finger. And it was brown and dry. And a fingernail on it. And flicked back, squints. What is that? Where'd you get that? And Jack Martin said, it belongs to my dad. You know whose finger that is? Flick said, whose? Jack Martin said, did you guys ever hear of John Dillinger? That is John Dillinger's little finger. Schwartz, John Dillinger's little finger. What do you mean? Where did you get? What'd your dad get that? My dad was in the next block when Dillinger was shot. He ran down there and saw all the stuff going on and all these people, and he saw it was Dillinger. And this is what he got. Well, we looked at it and hung around for a second. Martin put the top back on and stuck it back in the cabinet. We went back upstairs, and not one of us said a word. Martin says to Schwartz, why don't you finish your peanut butter sandwich? Schwartz says, well, I'm going to have supper pretty soon. Well, thanks, Martin. That was real interesting. He says, you won't tell anybody. I won't tell nobody. Boomer didn't say anything. He just gulped. but just to then sweat. We went out the back door, me and Schwartz, Flick and Broder. We got back out in the alley, and Flick says, let's kick the can. Schwartz says, oh, I don't want to kick the can. We walked back through the dusk. You're listening to a guy that saw John Dillinger's left little finger. That's what they said it was, anyway. God only knows what it really was, but I can tell you this. It sure as hell had a fingernail on it. That I know. Told you it was going to be a sickening, rotten story. And that isn't the end of it. That is not the end of it. Because not more than 3 months after that, the sequel to it was even more fantastic. That's why I told you not to listen tonight. I mean, I doubt whether any of you have ever seen the finger of a live, walking around human being in a Prince Albert can. Not one of you. And you know I couldn't make up something like that. Before we go any further, we got a couple of other commercials here.
Time for the following political announcement paid for by the Judge Arthur Blinn for Surrogate Committee.
A surrogate. S-U-R-R-O-G-A-T-E, is that it?
No, that was a quote underneath something else. I forgot. Totally.
A surrogate is like when you have a false pill. Like, you know, no, that's not a surrogate. That's a placebo.
A surrogate is someone who stands in.
That's right. The surrogate court is a stand-in for someone who cared about their family but who has passed away. I'm Judge Arthur Blinn, and I want to reform the surrogate's court. I want to make the court a place where people know that all of their efforts to provide for their loved ones won't go down the drain in a court where political patronage appointees have received exorbitant fees. I want to continue Robert F. Kennedy's fight to end the looting of estates by politicians.
Judge Arthur Blinn has dedicated his life to reform. That's why the Reform Democratic Movement in Manhattan has chosen Judge Blinn as its candidate for surrogate. And that's why the Judge Blinn for Surrogate Committee paid for this commercial.
I remember, oh, I've seen some scenes, I'll tell you. I remember one time in the same, not more than 3 months later, in the same scene, I saw this guy, see. he says to me, there's another kid, see. He says, hey, you want to see something? I said, what? Oh, I better not tell you this. I said, what? Anytime somebody sidles up to you and says out of the corner of his mouth, hey, you want to see something? You got your choice right there. You're going to see something you may not want to see. Or you can go ever and through your life and forever be one of the innocent ones. I'll tell you. This kid says to me, hey, do you want to see something? I says, yeah. He says, well, come with me. Well, right next to the school, there was a swamp. And this swamp was very wide, tremendous wide swamp. And it's like the Jersey Marshes out here, you know, it had cattails and all that stuff. So he said, come on out to the swamp. So we go out to the swamp. And it's like the Jersey Marshes out here, you know, it had cattails and all that stuff. So he said, come on out to the swamp. So we go out to the swamp. And I don't know where, how this ever happened. I mean, who did it or why? We go through the woods and the weeds and the weeds and the water and the swamp and the glop. We go about a half a mile. He says, wait, you see this? And there, sitting amid a pile of rubble and cattails and trees, was a little shack. He says, take a look at that. Somebody. I'm just telling you exactly what I saw. I shouldn't tell you this. This is going to have you screaming all night. Somebody. Well, I better not tell you this. It's a terrible story. No, you don't want to hear this. No, I better not tell you this story. No, it's a terrible story. I mean, when I saw this thing, I almost flipped. Well, all right. There was a shack in a swamp. You wonder why I have this curious sense of what's going on. This, when you see things like this, you just can't turn around. Anyway, here was this little shack. It was made out of old wood, and it was tumbled down. I'd seen it many times. You know, when you go out in the swamp, the kids would play out there, and it was always there. And it was old, and it had been there for many years, and it just practically decayed, and the roof was falling down. Nobody could live in it or anything. It was just an old, battered old shack in the middle of the trees with cattails all around it, water and swamp. And we knew how to get through to that. See, you hop from island to island and run through the mud and up and down this thing. I couldn't believe it. I'll tell you this. All right. Give me a little of that spooky music, man. I'm going to tell you. There, nailed to the side of the shack, believe it or not. Well, I might as well come right out and tell you. It was a hand. Bring it up big. Somebody had nailed a hand. Well, I was about 20 feet away. Oh, my God. Oh, still. Have you ever seen a hand nailed to something? There was. A hand. And it was a nail right through. It was on the side of this battle, you know, right there. The swine. They scuttled. They scuttled all around you. He said, I saw it the other day when I was on the swamp. Well, the two of us, it scared us. We you know, he had seen it before, but now it scared him all over. We ran like hell back to this place. Back to school. We ran back to the swamp. And I'm about, you know, 50% hysterical. We get back out to the playground. We're walking through the playground, and I said, we got to tell somebody about that. And he says, oh, don't tell anybody. I said, I'm going to tell Mr. Sanderson. He said, don't tell him. We're going to get in trouble. I said, oh, I'm going to tell him Mr. Sanderson was the school janitor. And he was always there by the front of the school. So I said, I've got to tell him. He said, oh, no, don't. We're going to get in trouble. I said, come on, Scott, we're going to tell him. The two of us went over. And this guy, he's got a corn cob pipe. He says, what's the matter with you guys? I said, there's a hand out there nailed to the shack out in the woods. He said, hand, are you out of your mind? Yeah, it's a hand. He said, come on, you kids, you're putting me on. No, there's a hand out there. And he took off like a bird. He ran into the swamp. 5 minutes later, he was back with blood in his eye. There was a hand to the side of the door. I'm not going to tell the rest of it. Bring it up there, please, Bill. That's for next semester. Oh, man, thank you, Bill. That's enough. I don't want to tell you anymore. Okay. Now, you wanted to hear the end, didn't you? Of course. Now, what if I told you I got 5 years? I spent them in the Michigan City pen, huh? Would you accept that? Yeah, you probably would. That's the trouble. Yeah, then I'd have to... Of course, then immediately five agents would call me up and try to get me, you know, get me folk singing gigs. But, nevertheless, the sequel of this is insane. We were called up to Miss Norton's office. She was the principal. And me and this kid and Mr. Simonson, Sanderson, rather, all of us are, you know, he drags us in there. And he says, tell her. And so we told her, we saw his hand. He says, yeah, there's a hand out there. She's a hand out there in the swamp. And this became, incidentally, quite a cause celeb. So at that point, she says, I'm going to call the police. So she did. And about 20 minutes later, and we're sitting in the office waiting to see what, you know, was going to happen. The police came. They went out there. This police sergeant came back, his face is as red as a beet. Somebody had nailed a glove to the side of the wall. And all of us had seen, every one of us had seen a hand when we went out there. It was the swamp. It was being out there in the woods with the snakes. It was being out there with the cattails, with the wind blowing, and the spooky sounds going through the trees. It was just out there to begin to rot your head. I saw a hand. I swear it was a hand. Mr. Sanderson saw a hand. Everybody saw a hand. Except the police sergeant. He saw a plain, ordinary work glove. It was kind of white, you know. Somebody had nailed it there. Well, I want to tell you this. You see a hand, a glove nailed to the side of a building, man, and that'll scare you. Speaking of of scary moments, I am going to be... Let's see. I've got to find it here. Or should we save this for... No, let's give it a little... All right, listen, I'm going to... We'll save this for next week. I think the grotesque is always just on the edge of our subconscious. And it is. There's no question about it. But what is it in us that makes us want to get scared? People love horror stories. Now, why? You'd think they wouldn't like them. But it's evil. Like the time all of us, me and Flick and Schwartz, creeped up to this house one day. And these people were having a seance. You ever seen a seance from the outside? With the red light hanging over the table and all these people sitting around the table with their hands on this table. And one of the people, this lady, sort of an old lady, was leaning back in her chair. And her mouth was open and she was making these strange screaming sounds. And all of us looked through the window seat. We're watching this. Let me tell you, the peeping Tom sees a hell of a lot more than Bear Bottoms, friends. I can guarantee you that. There's some things he doesn't want to see. And we're all looking through the window at this thing. With the red light bulb. And the worst part of it is that I always took the paper to this lady. I didn't, you know, she was the lady who I always took papers to. I was a paper boy at the time. I never could look at her the same. After that moment, with her eyeballs rolling and she's screaming, there's a trumpet hanging up in the air there and it's blowing something. And you can see Abraham Lincoln's head floating around in the darkness with the red light flickering over it all and a hand tacked to the side of a shack out in the swamp. Dillinger's finger with a fingernail on it. Oh, the evil that lies in the hearts of men. Only the deep pit knows. The deep pit.